The jobs report came out for February, and it was blockbuster, to the moon. But we saw unemployment actually increase as well, and wage growth very flatlined, actually. Didn't see very much Wall Street and shrugged its shoulders. We actually saw Nvidia down as well, but it could just be a one-off. I doubt it's going to be a trend. But regardless of that, buy, hold, sell loves talking about alternative investments, and we have the biggest alternative investment that there is right now. We're going to tell you all about it with our featured guest. Welcome, everyone. I am your trader, Todd Schoenberger, and I am joined by my friend and co-host, Tobin Smith, out in sunny and hot Scottsdale, Arizona. Don't tell me it's not sunny.
55 freaking degrees. You know how much electricity we're burning right now? Jesus.
Well, I'm glad you brought that up, because our guest today is going to tell us all about electricity. This is the most fascinating topic, one of the biggest stories that's out there. I'm surprised everybody isn't lined up to talk about it, but I'm just glad that we're first to really break the news. With us today, Timothy Kramer. He is the founder and CEO of Scenic Funds, CNIC Funds, and he's joining us today on Buy, Hold, Sell. Welcome to the program, Tim.
Thanks for having me, gentlemen.
Absolutely. I got to start with you, though, because when I looked at your pre-interview notes, you talked all about this electricity index. I'm fascinated by this because, as you know, we have the Dow Jones Industrial Average, the NASDAQ, the S&P. There's so many indices that are out there, but I've never heard of the electricity index. Can you tell us about it?
Absolutely. So you kind of hit the nail on the head here. Electricity is the most consumed commodity in the U.S. on a retail notional basis. But up until now, it hasn't been in any index, any mutual fund, any ETF. It hasn't been in anything. And so what we did is we created an electricity index, and it's based on six of the major electricity trading hubs in the U.S. And that's where the electricity futures are that are on ICE, the Intercontinental Exchange.
Right.
It is we partner with ICE to make this index. And so we launched the index in January of 23, and then in May of 23, we launched an ETF that's benchmarked to that. So now investors that want to get exposure to electricity as a commodity, they've now got a vehicle to do that.
Hey, so Timothy, in the summertime, we use more electricity. In the wintertime, we use slightly less electricity. I'm a simple-minded person, despite all the clutter back here. And why would I just, I would want to go long your index in the summer, and then I want to like reverse it the other way.
So certain regions, they'll peak. They'll have their maximum demand in the summer, and certain regions will actually have it in the winter.
Well, I live in one of those regions, trust me.
There you go, yeah.
The first $1,100 electric bill you get is, you know, more than my house payment.
They're memorable now, aren't they? Yeah. So what happens is with the index, it's a national average. And so you've got all sorts of factors that go on. So for instance, we just came out of back-to-back El Nino. So an El Nino is a mild winter. And so the winter of 24 was like December, January, February was like the most mild weather we've had since 1893. And the winter before that was also an El Nino. It was very mild. And so, you know, you don't have that much demand when you're in an El Nino. And so when we launch the index, you know, prices have come off somewhat. But what happens is then you're looking for what's going to be a La Nina scenario. So right now the predictions are saying that July and August are going to be blazing hot and extremely dry. So there are other factors that go on this, you know, because it's a national average. There's other factors that play into this other than just, you know, you think it's hot where you live. We're doing this to kind of reflect an overall period here and an overall regional view.
Well, you know, we got this report 2 weeks ago, which just blew me away, that even just today, the amount of electricity that the data centers are using for particularly AI data centers use more electricity than all of Spain together, right? Now, I don't do an index on this, but we happen to follow how many data centers are being built and how many data centers are being expanded. And they're expanding at a rate of about 12.5 to 14% a year, just in terms of size. And then in terms of electricity, it's more like, you know, 15 to 18, 20%. Do we have enough electricity to power all these damn things?
So if you have mild weather and you don't force certain retirements, then you probably do. I love the soundbite about Spain. There's another one that I like, and that is the amount of, for mining Bitcoin. 70% of the expense of Bitcoin is electricity. And so far, like the US is about 40 to 50% of all Bitcoin mining in the world. And the Bitcoin mining electricity use in the US took up more electricity than the state of Utah. So that's another one to match kind of what your Spain sells.
You know, the Mormons like candles around their house. Okay. I mean, I can understand that. But yeah, I mean, and then the third issue is, as I said, I'm an investor in nuclear, small nuclear plants, SMR and some other companies, private companies that produce electricity at a much lower cost than the traditional program. Does that affect your index? Are you going to include those guys in your index separately?
The index is just based upon wholesale electricity prices.
Okay. So
when you're talking about those modular electric generators, they tend to, especially when you're building something for the first time, they'll tend to want to hedge that so that they can get, you know, debt service coverage ratios and funding.
Ah.
And so when they do that hedging and they sell forward, you know, there's a certain price that they need in order to get their return. And nuclear is not cheap. And so, you know, people would say to us, oh, well, we're going to be all wind and solar because the U.S. has a goal of being 5% renewable by 2030 and 100% renewable by 2035. They're like, okay, well, you know, wind and solar are free. Prices are going to go to zero. Nah, the guys that build these things, they'd like to get a return.
Oh, I know. Yes.
Yeah. And number two is the issue that you have is all these renewables are not dispatchable, meaning you can't control the output. And so you still need to have some form of fossil fuel around where you can control the output or a significant amount of batteries. And those things need to get paid to stick around. So Lazard puts out a really good report every year called the LCOE, Levelized Cost of Electricity. If you take a look at what the wind and solar costs to build and the returns that they need to get, and then what it costs to firm those up, and then the carbon on top of that, those prices are well above where the forward curves are right now, long dated. So we just think this is a really interesting mismatch in the supply demand.
All right. So how do I make money in the index?
Well, hold on. I want to, before we get into that, I think you glossed over something that nobody's talking about, Toby, and that's the amount of electricity with these server farms. I mean, this could be another alternative way of how to make money with AI without having to invest in NVIDIA. I mean, what do you think, Toby? I would think this is a unique approach.
Yeah, I mean, utilities, I'm the son of a utility economist from Southern California. His entire job was to go figure out how to get a higher rate next year, because that was the job, basically, right? So utilities are a different animal in that if they're going to build a building, you know, another generator for $1 billion, they got to go to the rate group and say, okay, we need to raise our rate to be able to, you know, add this capacity. And we actually need to make a revenue. And also, by the way, we pay dividends because we're a utility. So those metrics are governed by city, by state, by region, et cetera. What you're talking about is the wholesale part, correct? In other words, the electricity that's created in Texas and gets shipped to California, right, over the long haul wires at the wholesale rate?
Sort of. I mean, we're just talking kind of the wholesale prices averaged in through the different regions.
Okay. Todd, it's electricity, as he makes a great point, is the most important commodity that we have. We just take it for granted until the lights go out.
And then
we got so stupid that we took one nuclear event in Japan, decided to shut down 25 nuclear reactors. And of course, Germany, who uses more electricity than anybody, shut down all of their nuclear reactors. And then they're on natural gas. So, you know, electrical power only gets more needed. The more you do these television, the more you do your Zoom show, the more you charge your EV, dare I say. And so how does the EV charging and the hybrid charging, that has to add to electrical consumption, right?
Sure. So direct answer to about the EVs, yeah. Right, is in 2023, electricity demand in the U.S., 1% of the whole demand was EVs. That number is supposed to grow to 5% by 2030 and to 10% by 2035. And then
do we have enough capacity to deliver that?
Yeah. We don't have enough capacity now.
I mean, that's just one example. If you take these things individually, yeah, you probably do. But if you take them in aggregate, so you take what the demand is from the data centers that you referenced, if you take the demand from the EVs, if you take, for instance, like, you know, when you talk about AI, the chips, okay, everybody's looking at NVIDIA. Well, these chips are, they draw 4 to 5 times more power than the chips that they're replacing. And people aren't really talking about that. If you do a Google search, it takes 1 watt of power. If you do an AI search, it takes 100 watts of power, but it takes
Yeah.
1,000 watts to train that. So when you take all these things in aggregate, you've got massive demand. Layer on top of that as you know, Todd talked about in the beginning, the US economy is doing pretty well. And so if you weather normalize what the electricity demand has been, you're seeing, depending upon the region of the country, anywhere from like 3 to 10% demand. And so a lot of these individual regions, they're called ISOs, a lot of them are revising upwards what their demand forecasts are going to be. So for the longest period of time, they're saying, oh, you know, more efficient and we've got, you know, flat growth, you know, maybe 0.9% growth. Now they're all revising upwards and saying, we've got, you know, 3 to 5% growth per year now on our forecasts. So when you take all these pieces together, the demand is understated. Warren Buffett was out 2 weeks ago on Twitter
Yeah.
saying, yeah, electricity is grossly understated for demand. Elon Musk was in the Wall Street Journal, I think 3, 4 months ago, and he was saying, look, whatever you think electricity demand is in the US, take it times four and you still missed it.
Okay, well, so we have the regulated utilities that have a, you know, they can only charge so much. You have the unregulated who are creating electricity and selling it on the wholesale market. I'll go back to my original question. How do I make money on the index, brother? How do I, you know, I mean, because I can buy futures if I want to, just like y'all, but you know, the average investor doesn't want to buy futures necessarily. But does the index, how does the index make an investor money? That's my question.
Sure. So to the take that in reverse order, you can buy futures if you want to, but if you want to do it, you need to recreate the index in order to give you what we're trying to provide. So you would need to go buy the six regions, and we're buying a 12-month calendar strip of these regions so that you get like a year exposure, because that's how people tend to buy their electricity. And then as each futures month expires, we roll that to the back month. So if you wanted to do this yourself, you absolutely could, but you need to watch it every day, you need to roll it every month, you need to wait it every month, you need to do all of that, right? And so we do that for you.
Got it. And when you roll it, let's assume the future price went up. So you've taken a profit. I mean, you're doing the index, but how do you, I mean, first off, can I invest in your index? Is there somebody who's running money that's using your index?
Yeah, the ETF itself is benchmarked to the index. So
Okay.
the ticker is AMPD, AMPD on the New York Stock Exchange. And so
Okay.
it is benchmarked exactly to the index. And so if you want to invest in the index, you just go buy AMPD, AMPD.
Wow.
So
Go ahead, Pat.
with the but now the narrative has shifted a little bit with the electric vehicle market. This was the darling of the auto industry just, I don't know, 9 months ago. Now everybody's kind of pivoted away from this. For a couple of reasons. I know Toby has a Tesla, so he could probably get into it a little bit more than I can. But with that, though, is that impactful to what your strategy is?
No, not at all. So I assume you're referencing some people talked about EV demand growth slowing. I think that you've basically, I think that the number in January wasn't as robust as people thought in terms of what the demand would be. That's 1 month on, you know, a Jan versus Jan comparison. And I don't really think you can draw a whole lot from that. But it doesn't matter whether you hit this, you know, 1%, 5%, 10% growth that we talked about, whether you get it by 2035 or 2040, you're still having this growth and it's still occurring. And so this is one of the ways that you could participate in the upside for that. The other thing
And does supply and demand work here? In other words, if there's more demand than supply, do prices generally go up for electricity?
Yes, absolutely. Yes.
Okay.
Wow.
Yeah, because
That's
I remember Enron, Ken Lay, we used to know from Aspen, crazy dude, and he didn't understand what business he was in. The other guy, his CFO, is the guy who actually understood the business, and they made trillions getting these contracts of California and other parts that didn't have enough electricity, and they would sell futures against, et cetera. I mean, they made trillions on that, right? Well, they're no longer in business, and there's a reason. So
Yeah.
now for the EVs that are coming, we have EVs that are like me, hybrid. Number two, you know, you're only charging for about 70 miles on your hybrid. The rest of it is as soon as that battery runs down, then your engine kicks in and charges the battery. The tax credits are ridiculous on them. One assumes that, you know, they're going to get, but it's all about range anxiety, Timothy. You know that. I mean, nobody here who drives in California, Arizona, other parts of the world, 70 miles to go play golf. Sure, who cares? Not if you're in a freaking, not if you're in an electric vehicle, man. You're like, and then go try to go plug your Tesla in. You know, if you should have like boxing gloves or something, or you should like throw money to people so they'll get up, because I mean it's a pain in the ass. And to me, the other story on your electricity consumption was, well, what happens when we have 75,000, then 750,000 charging units? Where's all that juice going to come from?
Yeah. So the range anxiety, absolutely. I mean, it's who knows how long it's going to take to reach the goals. But like you referenced California. So I believe California's goal is to have 35% of all new vehicles by 2026 be electric. And then by 2035, I think it's 100%. And whether they get there or not, I'm not sure, right? There's the range anxiety that you talked about, but the second thing is kind of the pricing point. So right now, where you can get most EVs, that pricing point, they're viewed as luxury vehicles. And to get these things more readily accepted and hit those growth numbers, you're going to need to drop the price. And you've got, groups that are doing that. So going back to talking about, some of the EV sales missed their numbers for January, a month-on-month or a month January versus January comparison is a little bit difficult. But, I mean, do you see the major automakers putting R&D and retooling on their combustion engine plants, or do you see them putting all their efforts into EVs right now?
Yeah.
So it's
we know that China is going to ship every freaking electric car they can to Mexico. Yeah. And they're building three giant plants in Mexico, and even Tesla's building a plant in Mexico. I'm with you. I think I understand this, but can you give us any numbers on, how much the index increased in value or decreased in value?
Well, we're going to tease it. Let's tease it, Toby. Right. It's show business. We want to tease that. So right. We got to get into all of that. Plus, I really got to break down this Scenic ETF. I really got to know what you're investing in, because we're talking about the index itself. Let's really, really dig deep into what the investment actually is. But with us today, we have Timothy Kramer. He is the founder and CEO of Scenic Funds. It's CNIC. Go to CNICfunds.com for more, and you'll see what they're offering over there. And it's exciting. It's extremely exciting. But we're going to tell you all about it in the next block, so you want to stick with us. We'll be right back after the break.
Buy, hold, sell, brought to you by CrossCheck Management.
Get ready for a revolution in business podcasting with the Weekly Money Clip. This game-changing podcast is brought to you by CrossCheck Media and CenterClip, and it's set to redefine how you think about money. Featuring a countdown of top business audio segments, each episode is packed with authentic and original commentary from over 50 independent contributors. Join us for a comprehensive exploration of money-related topics, where expert insights meet individual experiences in a 30-minute powerhouse of financial wisdom. Available on the Evergreen Podcast Network and all popular podcast platforms, the Weekly Money Clip is easily accessible to anyone interested in business and finance discussion. Don't miss out on this fusion of creativity, expertise, and innovation. Subscribe now and be part of the financial revolution with the Weekly Money Clip. Your financial future starts here.
This is Barbara Duran from BD8 Capital Partners, and you are listening to Todd and Toby on Buy, Hold, Sell.
Welcome back to Buy, Hold, Sell. Well, our guest today is really opening our eyes. I know Toby is just on the edge of his seat, because he can't get enough of this, because we're making electricity sexy again. And our guest today is telling us
It's near beer o'clock.
It's a great Friday show, no doubt about it. Okay. So with us today is Timothy Kramer. He is the founder and CEO of Scenic Funds, CNIC Funds. You can go to CNICfunds.com for more information. So Tim, I got to ask you went to the U.S. Naval Academy. Were you an electric engineer major?
I was just a general engineer major.
General engineer, that's awesome. So you clearly, you're a very bright guy. You know all about this. Your resume is very deep, and you have a lot of, it's definitely a Cadillac style resume with your A-list companies and the experience.
Are you asking for a date, Todd? Come on.
Now, well, where I'm going with this is that he knows what he's talking about when it comes to this stuff. So let's talk about the ETF itself that you're offering, because it is coming up on its one-year anniversary. I know the index is tracked back to 2014, but can you tell the audience, get into the ETF, because they want to know what they're investing in.
Yeah. Sure. So if you invest in the ETF is benchmarked against the index. So what the ETF does is it buys the exact futures that go in the calculation for the index. So it's the electricity futures for the six different hubs that we talked about in the U.S. to give you a broad overview of what the demand is. And then it's got the correct amount of carbon offsets in there also, and they're all exchange traded futures. And so what happens is there's an interesting aspect to this. If you buy futures, if you buy $100 worth of futures, you need to call up your broker and he'll make you put up about 20 bucks in terms of margin. And then the other 80 bucks, we put that in 3-month SOFR. So if nothing happens, if no power prices move whatsoever, you're at least going to get the risk-free rate of return. So you get paid to hold this position in case it doesn't do anything.
Now, wait a minute. Did you say silver or did you say CD?
SOFR, S-O-F-R, the LIBOR replacement.
The LIBOR number. Okay, yeah. Thank you, because I thought my hearing was gone.
What's the ticker on the ETF?
The ticker is AMPD, AMPT.
AMPT. Oh, man, that's awesome. Very creative by the marketing team.
That's a lot of creativity for a freaking engineer, by the way, Todd. That's very impressive.
So give us an idea, going back to 2014, how the index has performed. I mean, I know that you're not one for one on it, but there's probably some type of correlation there. At least investors can kind of get an idea of what it's like going for a decade now.
Sure. So all the way back to 2014, the index averaged about, we'll say, 14% a year in terms of what the returns are in the index.
Decent. Yeah. Wow, that's really good. That's really good.
Because you're using futures, you have internal leverage in the future.
Right, but we're not leveraging with the futures. So for instance, like we talked about, if you want to buy $100 worth of the futures, you put 20 up with your broker, and then the 80 goes in, LIBOR or SOFR, some sort of risk-free equivalent. You could, if you wanted to, you could buy 5 of those futures because it's only 20 bucks with your 100 bucks. But that's a ridiculous amount of leverage. And if it went one tick against you, you get a margin call and you'd be wiped out. So we're just trying to give you direct exposure, one-for-one exposure to what this is.
Okay. Go ahead, Toby.
I say if I had I have younger nephews all over them. In the IRAs that I managed from, I would put 2% and just forget about it. You're freaking, 18 years old. But if you thought that we were using less electricity when you're 65 than we are today, then you're out of your mind, or somebody's come up with fusion and you can have a fusion, machine in your backyard. But up until then, we're going to be using de facto more electricity. The utilities have a hard time building new plants, for God's sakes. We have the worst transmission system in the world. The amount of electricity that we lose just moving it from Texas to California that's a story I'd love to talk about one day, Todd. But
yeah, that's definitely another story.
But because we have to rebuild the entire infrastructure just to get enough juice to get the data centers going and, keep the Bitcoin miners, but also the new population, the new areas we're going to. We have less water, yada, yada, yada. I mean, the case for being long electrical power to me is just compelling.
And to add one more point to that, when you talk about, developing new generation to try to meet this excessive demand that we're talking about, the completion rate for things that are in the development queue in the U.S. averages about 8.7%. So you've got a lot of projects that I want to build something. And it's like, two guys in a shingle and they go file the paperwork. 8.7% of the stuff on average gets built. That's kind of the first one. And the second one is it used to take, we'll say 3 to 5 years to build something. Now you've got the rush to, like we talked about, 85% renewal by 2030, 100% by 2035. And so that permitting development until it's actually done and on the grid, that's 4 to 7 years now. And the government is saying we need to address kind of how long this backlog is taking. But there is a backlog and it's getting longer. So even when you recognize this need and you want to build this, there's still a lot of things you got to overcome.
Well, also, if we're going to do hydrogen, the only way to make hydrogen in a green way is with electricity. So the hydrogen economy that everybody wants, I happen to be an investor in a hydrogen storage company, and I'm financing a whole bunch of carbon capture projects right now. We could put 200 of these carbon peaker plants into these utilities. We just don't have enough parts to build them. We don't have enough people who know how to build them. You're so right on the demand issue. And because of the regulatory environment, and because, you know, money's expensive these days. Why did solar fall on its ass for the last 2 years? Because, you know, in my house in California, it would cost $1,400 to put all this, you know, the solar panels up. They'd finance 100% of it. And I'd pay $70 for my electricity, where I was paying $200, you know, for the one for the utility. Well, now the math got all messed up. And all of a sudden, you know, it was $2,500, you know, it was $1,400 a month for your payment for your solar panels, et cetera. When that comes down, I'm with you. That electricity's got to go on the grid. The grids are very impractical these days. And you're wasting, I don't know, you have a good number, Tim, in terms of how much electricity between, you know, the nuclear plant we have 78 miles over this way, and how much gets to my house, how much slippage on the system?
So typically transmission losses average between 3-5%, depending upon distance and some other factors. Mm-hmm. But you hit on another point that I just want to come back to. And that is when you talk about like building new plants, right? So interest rates are up. So the cost to finance this, the labor costs are higher. There's a part shortage. And so a really good example is Ørsted, the European company that does offshore wind. They were contracting at around, we'll say, $94 a megawatt hour for all this offshore wind. They had to rip up the contracts and take a write-off because that cost is now somewhere between $114 and $140 a megawatt hour. So even for what things people, for what they think are economic right now, you just got to kind of revisit because the costs are going up. So even if you can get it built, you can get it permitted and get it on the grid, it's going to cost more than what you thought it did. And that's still not reflected in where the forward markets are right now.
Huh. Okay. Let's pivot for a second on this, though. I want to know about the guardrails. Tell us what can happen, maybe regulatory, that could really kind of really cause some pressure on your strategy and what you're trying to do.
Well, I mean, the obvious one would be is if we decided to re-regulate electricity, but I can't think of any example where a market that's been deregged went re-regged. So, I mean, once the genie is out of the bottle, that's it.
Yeah, okay. So is there anything, we had the State of the Union address last night, you're in the middle of a presidential cycle. Is there anything that's maybe in the pipeline right now that investors need to be aware of that's
not? Politically, Todd? Do you mean politically, regulatory wise?
Yeah, politically, yes.
So right now there's a push for even tighter EPA restrictions. And so what those restrictions would be doing is getting the coal plants offline even faster. And originally the proposal was to get all these natural gas fired plants offline very quickly too. And then all of a sudden it looks like people are saying, wow, we have a real reliability issue. So they're trying to figure out the way to grandfather this. So either they're saying certain size existing natural gas plants, if you're below a certain size, you can stay. And if you're above a certain size, you got to get off. And they're also trying to address, well, maybe it's just new natural gas plants are going to have this EPA issue. So the government and kind of just, you know, the consumer in general, they're starting to realize there's a reliability issue going on and the rules are getting tweaked to be a little bit more realistic. But you're still marching towards, you know, being 100% carbon-free generation. And that's the goal. And that's what people are pushing for.
Well, Todd, again, one of the companies that we finance for about $15 million builds onto an existing natural gas power plant, what's known as a peaker plant that runs the electricity when, you know, people get home to turn on their TV and all that stuff. And the heat from that is used to take out all of the carbon from that natural gas plant, 100%. And it the byproduct of the way you do that is you take the water out of it. I don't want to get too, you know, into the weeds, but all of a sudden now you wind up with this, you know, pure water, which you sell to, you know, variety of companies. And then you have CO2, which there's a big shortage of. And I truly believe, I mean, I've done a lot of math on this. You get 500 to 800 of these peaker plants that are removing CO2 from natural gas plants. You're not getting rid of the natural gas plants. And we have the most natural gas in the world. We have by far the largest reserve. What are we not going to do this? What are we going to send it all to China, for Christ's sake? So,
right.
So technology is coming and it's here that is going to help this significant issue on reducing carbon to zero from a natural gas power plant, which means you're going to have more natural gas power plants.
Okay. Okay. So, Tim, I want to ask you this before we close out the show. So you have this unique perspective on electricity. Is there a way to actually look at the consumption of electricity and how that can actually provide a proxy as far as what the U.S. economy is doing?
Oh, yeah. So the EIA, if you go on their website, they post what the demand numbers are. And
okay.
So you can just
so go, give us an idea.
So in terms of like what actual.
You're seeing as far as numbers go, I mean, consumption numbers. I mean, should we assume that it's because it really this winter was not, it was a very mild winter coast to coast. But are you still seeing people saying, oh, yeah, you know what? I got my EV car, but I also have to charge my iPhone, my iPad. I got all this. Consumption is up, therefore people are spending more money just on keeping the house with the lights on. I mean, that would signal to me that, hey, the economy's doing okay. But what do you think?
Yeah, we're still seeing the predictions from the individual regions that make up the index and the ETF. They're still saying right now that they think that their year-on-year growth is going to be 3%, but for now in like the next 10 years. And that's we think that's conservative, again, because of the numbers that we talked about. So, you know, the data centers are going to be increasing between 10 and 30% what their consumption is every year for the next 10 years. The EVs are going to be increasing up to like 10% of the overall U.S. consumption by 2030. Just so many things are on this. The chips, like we talked about, we don't really see anything where people are saying the consumption is going to be down at all.
Well, Todd, the only thing that correlates to our economy when it comes to electricity is in the is in the manufacturing space. We can see clearly where manufacturing places that use a lot of electricity, GDP goes up. You get it from auto manufacturing. You get it from but it's from the goods part of the world. The fluctuation in the price of electricity and or natural gas, it is driven by these LDUs. It's driven by regulatory. I mean, but it's somewhat correlated. But the only correlation I've ever seen that anybody does numbers on is on manufacturing. Because, for instance, in Germany, it's a one-to-one correlation between manufacturing and GDP, and their GDP is negative 3% right now. And guess what manufacturing is? Negative 3%. So that's really the correlation. And how much electricity is consumed in manufacturing is the only correlation I've ever seen as an economist, not as an engineer.
I like it. Final question for you, Tim. How can investors get involved with this? Because I know that they're probably chomping at the bit to move forward.
Sure. So the ticker is AMPD, A-M-P-D, and it's on the New York Stock Exchange. And then you can go to the website, cnicfunds.com, and we've got white papers that we post on there. We try to write like a 5-page white paper on different topics that investors ask us about. And so between those resources, you should be able to make an informed decision and see if you think this makes sense for you.
Tim, one final question.
Sure.
Will there ever be, do you think, a chance to separate the green energy price from the natural gas traditional type? In other words, would I be willing to pay more for my electricity if I knew it was 100% carbon free? Are we ever going to get there?
There's efforts right now to come up with an all green index and all green consumption and things like that. The problem that you have, right, is electricity flows like water. So if I have a generator and I put electricity on the grid, you can't say that what goes through your
what part's green and what part's black, right?
So there's an issue, but there's an effort for people to try to be able to find a way to track that. So that's probably not too far off in the future where you can actually find a way to get that accounting to say that that's done, but it's not really there on a usable, commercial, scalable basis right now.
Well, here in Arizona, our solar panels, we sell back to the grid, and it's regulated. And they have all the numbers on how much energy was sold, brought back to the grid. That would be interesting.
Yeah, and that's what I was kind of referring to. They're getting close to being able to track that into that computation.
All right, cool.
I don't know what graphic just popped up on your screen there, Toby. It looked like a thumbs up. I've never seen that before. I wonder how much electricity was used for that.
that was AI, by the way. I swear to God, you can't make that up. So nice. There you go. Tie it all up in a bow.
That was fantastic. For those listening, you definitely want to check out the show, which is on Biz Talk Today TV, BTT. Definitely want to see what's happening with everything with the show. But listen, gentlemen, we're going to close it out right there. What a wonderful conversation. So much to explore. Tim, you were wonderful, and we definitely want to have you back. Definitely when you come up on your one-year anniversary.
Yeah,
I appreciate the opportunity, guys.
Absolutely.
All right, and I'm going to be making a chart of that ETF in about 3 minutes, okay? So
go for
it. Love that. And for the audience, you want to go to CNIC Funds, CNICFunds.com. We will also have a hyperlink in the description on the audio and the video side as well. We encourage everyone to go check out what Tim and the crew are offering over there. So on behalf of Timothy Kramer and Tobin Smith, I am Todd Schoenberger. We want to wish everyone a wonderful weekend, and we can't wait to see you back on Buy, Hold, Sell next week. Take care now.
Buy, Hold, Sell, brought to you by CrossCheck Management.
Imagine how fast we could solve the world's biggest problems if more SaaS startups would gain traction sooner. Welcome to the Tech Entrepreneur on a Mission podcast. This podcast is dedicated to sharing experiences from B2B SaaS CEOs who are going above and beyond to deliver change that is noticed. You will hear their secrets and learn what is required to build a SaaS business that the world starts talking about and keeps talking about, and how to overcome the roadblocks to do so.